There's an ancient saying, the beginning of wisdom is ignorance. So where do we create the ultimate warrior? With innocence. Dr. Catherine Halsey.
He has scoured the realms and unearthed all manuscripts. Unfurled every scroll. Studied the manifestos. Unlatched every grimoire across the scape. He has cracked every tome. He is Vitiligo. And this is Cracking the Tome.
Yes, welcome, scholars, adventurers, and casual lore readers of the like. I am your lore master, Vitiligo, and this is episode number 2 of Cracking the Tome. As always, thank you so much for checking out my podcast. It means a lot, and I cannot do it without you. So today we are going through the second part of the Halo episodes, which is going to be done way smoother than the first one. The way I did the first one wasn't very efficient, let's just say that. So I started reading the Forerunner trilogy while I was at work, and since while I was at work, I couldn't take notes on the books. So when it was time to actually start recording, I had to go back and jot down everything that I learned from the first time reading them, and even reread parts of it as well, and had to then put everything in order. And I basically did it 3 times over, which was really, really, really exhausting. Like, to be honest, I'm a little ready to move on from Halo after this. I am so ready. Not saying that I dislike Halo now. No, I'm just completely worn out from basically having to do the Forerunner trilogy 3 times over. And then after getting into this, and I was going to start streaming the games, and I was going to stream them all the way through, I'm not going to do that anymore, or at least not right now, because this episode I plan on doing the history from basically the start of the Covenant, which is the first thing to really happen from the firing of the Halo arrays 99,000 years ago or so, and I'm going to end at the Fall of Reach. And what I plan to do when I start an IP like Halo, I'm just going to go through the history of it first. Like, I'm going to try to hit everything and all the history before the games, which is a lot of information that doesn't get covered a lot in the games and stuff, or at least doesn't get covered well enough for people to really cement it in their minds. So I'm going to try to hit the histories of these IPs that I'm going through first, and then I'll revisit them down the road and do the episodes of explaining what's actually happening in the story of the games, because once again, if you're anything like me, I still struggle to understand a lot of the key concepts in a lot of games I play. I know with the larger ones, a lot of people already know them, but a lot of people who haven't had the opportunity to play them, well, it's going to be for them. A good example of this, other than the Halo, because people who own PlayStation definitely know of Halo, but they've never had the opportunity to play it. And the same with God of War for the people who only own Xboxes. So games like that are going to be the stuff that I dive into for the games. But not just limited to those as well, just because there's so many games out there that people just haven't had the opportunity to play, the time to play, or just, you know, haven't gotten around to it yet, and they just still want to know about the history and the world about it. So yeah, that's the plan and kind of the syllabus for what's going on right now and in the near future. So, without further ado, let's get cracking. So as previously mentioned before, the galaxy was repopulated after the Halo Array by taking the remaining species that were saved on the Ark and taking them back to their respective planets. One of those races was the Sanshum, the Prophets. They are the leaders of the Covenant and basically the ones who started it. They are looked up on by every other race of the Covenant to a point where they even praise them and pray to them. I just got done reading the book Contact Harvest, and in the book, it kind of goes on both sides. It shows you the Covenant side, and it shows you the human side. And on the Covenant side, they always are saying, like, prophets be praised, like, bless the prophets, and stuff like that. So they are highly, highly regarded in the Covenant. So a little overview of the Covenant before we really start getting into the details and the history of them. The Covenant thought that the Forerunners reached transcendent life by activating the Halos, and that's why there are no trace of them left in the galaxy. They believed that the unworthy were killed, and the worthy were elevated to this transcendent space, to basically become gods. And in turn, they believed that they were the worthy and inheritors of the Forerunners' legacy. So that turned their entire goal into activating these Halos and elevating themselves. So we all know the problems with that, but that was the Sand Shroom's entire idea from the start, because they ran into a lot of Forerunner artifacts to begin with, and even a Dreadnought, which was the large, large war-class ship of the Forerunners that was their, basically their destroyer. And they started studying all of these artifacts, started learning from them, gaining their technology, using them. Which is exactly why they had troubles when they ran into the Sangheili, which are the elites. The elites wanted to preserve all the Forerunner artifacts, so they still had the same mindset that they were to be worshipped and that they were the higher beings of the time. But they thought it was blasphemy how the prophets were using these artifacts and trying to study them, and the Sangheili just wanted them to be left alone. Because they're ancient religious artifacts to them. So that's what started the first war between the elites and the prophets. And that war started at 938 BC when the prophets discovered the elites on their search for more Forerunner artifacts. Which is actually how they meet every single race, because they're on an unending quest for more Forerunner artifacts and to find the Halos. So the war did not go very well for each side. The elites had way more numbers and were vicious warriors, as you know, but the Sand Shroom had higher technology because they've been studying the Forerunner artifacts and they had that war-class destroyer, the Dreadnought. So I've read that the elites surrendered, but also the Sand Shroom kind of wanted to end it as well, because if they were fighting this powerful of a race that could do this much damage to the Sand Shroom with their Forerunner technology, what stronger races could be out there, and they feared their own extinction eventually, so they wanted to create a union as well, since they both kind of have the same mindset as far as the Forerunners go. So at 850 BC, they became a union and called it the Covenant. So that is the start of the Covenant, is the elites and the prophets. The next race they run into was at 784 BC, and they were the Lugolo. The Hunters, which are really cool to learn about, actually. So the Hunters are actually a bunch of worms that are about a meter and a half in length that join together to form specific purposes and specific creatures, like the Hunters. When they were found by the Covenant, they were on a world that was filled with Forerunner artifacts, but they had been eating them and burrowing through them, which is blasphemy to the Covenant, as you would have expected. So they must be able to eat metal. I know they can merge with machines and kind of control them or whatever, kind of like the Hunters or just a bunch of the worms, and then they're kind of controlling the lasers and all that stuff. So upon discovery of this heresy, war were declared. They were formidable foes against the Covenant, actually, because, well, you know, Hunters. And also, the Scarabs are actually Lugolo Hunter technology, which is something I wouldn't have expected at all. So they had Scarabs and they had Hunters. So think of fighting a war against just Scarabs and Hunters, which are basically the two most powerful weapons that the Covenant possesses. So they definitely gave the Covenant a run for their money. But in the end, they ended up converting them and indoctrinating them into the Covenant. So the Covenant has a home station instead of a home world. It's called High Charity, and it's a moving space station about 350 kilometers across that got built about 200 years after the Sand Shroom homeworld was destroyed. And the Covenant tells time based on one rotation of the space station, which is about 265 hours on Earth, which is a little over 11 days. These are called cycles to them. They keep time as well through ages, depending on the events that happen. So during the time of Halo Combat Evolved, they are in their seventh age. So they have their own time scale at which all these events are happening, but I'm giving you the human scale because it would just be confusing if I did it the other way. Following that, they met their next species that they would have joined the Covenant about 480 BC, and they discovered the Yanmei, which are the drones. The drones are a hive mind and very, very annoying bug-like creatures.
In this conflict, this is the first time that the Covenant actually took more damage than the race they were trying to indoctrinate. The conflict lasted until the Sanshum, the prophets, discovered a way to communicate with them and then incorporated them as a treaty. Then nothing really happens until about 2,000 years later at 1340 AD, and they discovered the Kigyar, which are the jackals. At the time they were discovered by the Covenant, pirating was a huge issue for their race, but when they found the Covenant and started going to war with them, the pirates and the militia from their planet joined together to fend off the Covenant. Eventually, though, they came to kind of a stalemate with each other and made peace, and then the Jackals joined the Covenant initially as mercenaries at first. About 800 years later, in 2142 AD, the Covenant found the Ungoi, which are the Grunts. This actually happened without any conflict, surprisingly. They just kind of inherited them, and the Grunts were okay with it. For a little bit. Because 20 years later, they rebelled for being treated unfairly. So I actually really enjoy the Ungoi Rebellion, the Grunt Rebellion against the Covenant, because it absolutely devastated the Covenant from the inside out. Caused social unrest, they were actually a formidable foe for the Covenant, and really just wasn't, the Covenant wasn't ready for it at all. So how it started out was the Grunts started becoming overpopulated, because they can reproduce very fast and in large quantities. So the ones that were stationed and living on High Charity, the space station, were making other species relocate, and the Jackals were the ones who were getting the butt end of that. So the Jackals had to relocate their homes and their nests, which really screwed up their mating season, and which led to high casualties for births and infants. So this was really, really pissing the Jackals off. As it should, you know. So to get back at the Grunts, they decided to poison their infusions. Grunts are the only race in the Covenant that doesn't breathe oxygen. They breathe methane. So that's why they're constantly in gas masks and have the tanks and all that sort of stuff, just so they can survive. An infusion is a recreational drug that they put into their methane canisters and get high off of it. So a few of these Jackal captains put poison in their recreational drugs, which in turn started making some of the Grunts infertile, which was unexpected, but the perfect revenge for the Jackals, because their births were getting screwed up and their mating season was getting all messed up, so it really worked out for them. So the Grunts actually didn't realize it at first, and they thought it was something else that was making the males infertile. But when they found out, they took it to the council, and the council basically sloughed it off because they valued the Jackals' loyalty more than the Grunts. Like, they just didn't want to piss off the Jackals, so they just kind of was like, eh, no big deal, we'll let it go. This is what really set the Grunts off. This is what made them start rebelling against not just the Prophets and not just the Jackals, but every single race in the Covenant. It was more or less a final straw for the Grunts because of the way that they'd been treated since they got into the Covenant. Because they have such high numbers and they were expendable, when it came to battle, they were sent in as a first wave to kind of just dwindle the numbers of the opponents as much as possible. It was absolutely suicide missions. They sent them in there just to die because they were so expendable and there were so many of them. They actually didn't have any armor either or any Covenant weaponry. So the Covenant really did not give a shit about the Grunts. They just were like a tool to them, basically. So when the rebellion started, the Covenant was more or less losing the battle on High Charity strictly out of the tenacity of the Grunts and the overwhelming numbers. The elites actually had to instill an arbiter for the first time in a very, very long time. For those of you that don't know, the arbiter is, well, it was the highest possible honor of the elites and only gotten stated when direly needed. If you've played the games, you understand that the arbiter is more a shameful title. And that changed when one of the Arbiters, shortly before the Human Covenant War, didn't believe in the religious cause anymore and was stripped of the title and killed. So since then, it was a title of shame, and they only sent the Arbiter on suicide missions as a part to regain their honor. The Arbiter at the time of the Grunt Rebellion, though, is in charge of everything. So he decided to start glassing the Grunt homeworld, which the ones on High Charity didn't really care that much about, except for the fact that they were losing breeding partners. So they did end up surrendering, but from the Rebellion, the Covenant saw how important of warriors they actually were. So everything for the Grunts changed after that. They were actually given Covenant armor and Covenant weapons, and the entire Covenant's military tactics changed after that, because they used to send all these different races in waves, which now, after the Grunt Rebellion, they just send them all in groups and fight as a whole. So after the Grunt Rebellion, about 30 years later, the Covenant discovered the Jirohane, which are the Brutes, and they were just getting out of a civil war on their homeworld, or kind of still in it, really, which took them back to the pre-industrial state. So they were just devastating their entire planet when the Covenant showed up. Right off the bat, some joined willingly and others didn't, and the ones who didn't were quickly defeated and converted. So that was pretty cut and dry for the Covenant at this point. So that's all the species in the Covenant and how they got there, and basically all the history you really need to know for the full story before we get to the Human Covenant War. So I'm going to give a little run through on the important things that happened for humanity before the Human Covenant War started. Humanity didn't start colonizing space until 2080, and they started that with a very typical Mars colonization, and then branched out to other places in the solar system. With the branching out and colonizing space, there started to become an insurrection, and people started seceding from the human government. In 2163, the UNSC, United Nations Security Council, was made to combat the secessionists. After about 10 years after that, a union is made and the United Earth Government is formed. Then in 2291, humanity discovered slipspace. It is looked at as the most important technological discovery of all time. Which makes sense, because if we discovered that, it would be the most important discovery of all time as well. So in the Halo universe, the humans that discovered slipspace, they discovered another dimension, which they go into when they are warping through space. Their ships open up a portal and they go through it, and they enter this other dimension, and then they come out the other side where they want to. Depending on how far it is, though, it does take longer to get there. So it's not immediate, and there is some lag for it. Traveling the range of the human colonies could take up to 3 months, but taking a short little jaunt in space would only take a few days or so. After that discovery, about 70 years later is when they decided to reach out of the solar system and start colonizing other places. And the first place they colonized was the planet Reach. Reach was very, very close, I think only like 10 light years away from Earth. So it's basically right next door on a galactic scale, you know. Reach turned out to be one of the most populated planets, and just as homeworldish to the humans as Earth was. So when the fall of Reach happened, that was extremely large hit to the human race. So I'm going to take a little step back in the timeline right now and talk about everybody's favorite thing. The Spartans.
My Spartans are humanity's next step, our destiny as a species. Do not underestimate them. But most of all, do not underestimate him. Dr. Catherine Halsey.
So for those of you who don't know, Spartans are super soldiers that were made to combat the insurrectionists. In Spartan 1 programs, they used adults and tried to genetically modify them, but was never really successful. I mean, they worked, but it wasn't to the point that they were wanting it to. So it was disbanded sometime after due to the amount of funds that it was causing to make them and how little they were getting out of them. But in 2491, it was reinstated, and it worked better this time, but still not as great as they wanted, and too much costs made them disbanded it in 2506. The same year is when the Spartan 2 program got started. As many of you may know, the Spartan 2 program is the same program that Master Chief came out of. It was conceived and forerun by Dr. Catherine Halsey, and this is where it starts to get a little controversial and slightly unethical. So this time, instead of taking soldiers that they already had and turning them into super soldiers, they decided to start with children, and the children that they acquired were children from the insurrectionists that they more or less kidnapped, or if they destroyed a whole building or something, there was a child left, they'd take them and raise them as their own, but it was mostly kidnapping. So they took these kidnapped children and they started genetically modifying them and training them to become super soldiers, which worked way, way, way better than previous attempts with fully grown humans already. They took the genetic enhancements way better. Training a child from birth to be a super soldier is way more effective than just starting them when they're 18 or whenever they started training soldiers in this era. They started training them at about 6 years old and also matched them with the Mjolnir armor that you see Master Chief and all the other Spartans wearing. Master Chief wears Mark IV Mjolnir armor. They went from Mark I to Mark V within 10 years, which, looking at what they started with as like the prototype of the Mark I's going to what they are now, is just impressive, even for a highly technological race. But with the speed of how everything else is moving and has moved with this, for them to get such progress in the armor in such a short amount of time is really impressive. But it was also led by Admiral Halsey, and everything she touches just turns to gold. So then again, not that surprising, I guess. The Mjolnir armor kept getting upgrades throughout the years and getting new marks up to 6 and 7, but it never changed anywhere near as much as it did from Mark 1 to 4. 4 was when they decided they'd really honed in what they wanted to do with it from the start. Spartan 1s didn't have powered armor, or at least nowhere near close to the type of powered armor that we know that super soldiers have. So with all these other benefits that the Spartan 2s have over the Spartan 1s, it made them absolutely the best weapon that the human race had by far against insurrectionists or the Covenant or, you know, the Flood in the future. In 2531, they started using children only from orphanages around the human colonies, instead of just stealing them out of their beds like they were doing for the Spartan 2s. Which, a little fun fact now that you're thinking about it, yes, Master Chief was one of those children that was stolen out of their beds by the UNSC, and this was actually thought of a way a little bit to take the story as Master Chief kind of getting revenge against the UNSC and turning and going against them. But it wasn't thought about very long, and they said it was just not really a direction they wanted to take this story at all. But yeah, heard that somewhere. So by the time they started to have the Spartan 4 programs, they had figured out the issue with only having to use children, and they went back to using soldiers and turning them into super soldiers, which is good. So that about wraps up the Spartan section of this. Now we move on to the Human Covenant War. The first contact with the Covenant was on a small ship on the edge of the human territory in 2525, right near the planet called Harvest. Fun fact, Sergeant Johnson was actually one of the first humans to come in contact with the Covenant and survive, which to me makes him even more of a badass than he already was. If Sergeant Johnson was one of your favorite characters in the games, I highly suggest reading the book Contact Harvest, because it entirely deals with the very first contact with the Covenant, and the main character of the story is Sergeant Johnson. So you get to kind of see how he becomes an alien-slaying badass. While reviewing these books and putting some information from them in the podcast that is unknown elsewhere in lore, I'm going to try to keep out the details of the story so I don't spoil anything but still get important information in here. So I'm going to try to do my best about that. I'm not going to talk much about Contact Harvest. It's a pretty good book, but it's very militaristic, I guess would be the way to say it. So if you're into military novels, I will highly recommend reading it. You'll love it. But if they're not kind of your thing, I would suggest maybe not. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a good book. It didn't captivate me like the Forerunner trilogy did, but I still enjoyed reading it. Mostly because you kind of get an origin story on Sergeant Johnson. Well, and the whole Human Covenant War. So it was good, but probably not one I'm going to go back and read again. I totally would reread the Forerunner trilogy, though. Also, one last thing that's not really a spoiler for Contact Harvest is it gives you an origin story of Tartarus, too. That big, giant, white brute with the hammer. Really good on that part, too. I really enjoyed reading it. It kind of flip-flops back and forth between the Covenant side view of things and then flips over to the human view of things. And I really liked that part of it, but still, military novel wasn't as captivating. Yeah. I was going to read The Fall of Reach as well, but never got around to it and figured I'd just play through the Reach campaign instead, which I'm still doing, but I'm only like 2 missions in at this point, so I don't really know what the point of me sharing this information was. So after they make contact and have a little scuffle, they realize that in their search for Forerunner artifacts that brought them there, they realize that the humans were actually the Forerunner artifacts. And in that, they realize that the humans are the ones who are going to inherit the mantle and are the true reclaimers. So the prophets did not like that, and they started to want to wage war against humanity and genocide them to keep it under wraps. And so if they were eliminated, they would be the true inheritors of the mantle. So at this point, the prophets realize that everything that they've based their religion of the Covenant off of is entirely wrong, and they just want to kind of keep it under wraps and sweep it under the rug and take care of the problem before it becomes a problem. So that's why they started to genocide humanity instead of giving them a chance to join the Covenant like they have every single other race. That did not go unnoticed with the elites, however. They started questioning that down the road and whatnot, and that's what really started breaking apart the Covenant and starting their downfall. But at first, they just started completely wiping out everything that they could find of humanity. So they started to glass harvest and completely melt it and turn it into a wasteland. If it was an important planet to humanity, they would actually carve the Covenant symbol into the planet, which is just insane and kind of just dickish. Just really kicking somebody while they're down. And they were down. The humans were getting absolutely massacred through this entire war. The humans had this plan to end the war. It was called Operation Red Flag. It was to be conducted in 4 phases, and the first phase was basically use one of the worlds as bait and basically sacrifice it to conduct this plan. The first phase was to get a Covenant flagship at the planet and disable it. Phase 2 was to board it with a bunch of Spartan 2s and a powerful AI to crack the navigation system and be able to operate it. Phase 3 was taking this ship with an army of Spartan 2s and this special AI to High Charity, which is the Covenant's home spaceship thing that is basically the size of Wyoming. Phase 4 would be to infiltrate High Charity and capture one of the Prophet Hierarchs, which they would then hold hostage and open up negotiations with the Covenant to end the war. A war that they were absolutely going to lose. So this was humanity's big grand master plan to end the war. They had only at first hypothetically thought about sacrificing Reach, which has a population of 708 million people. In July of 2552, they had an AI calculate that there was an 87% chance that the Covenant would find Reach within the next 5 months. So since it was more than likely that Reach was going to not exist within a year, the higher-ups started talking back and forth about implementing and starting Operation Red Flag on Reach. By the way, they told nobody else about this. They didn't tell the people of Reach, they didn't tell people in the UNSC that the Covenant was probably gonna be there and destroy 750 million people. Just said nothing. But no harm, no foul, because within a week of them talking about starting Operation Red Flag and getting this data from the AI, the Covenant was already on Reach. This is where the beginning of Halo Reach's, the actual game, story starts. It starts with Noble Team, a group of Spartans, going to Reach to find out where all these missing platoons of troops are going. They believe that they're having an insurrectionist problem, and then they get there and realize that there's plasma marks everywhere, and insurrectionists don't have plasma weapons. Then they eventually run into some Covenant and realize, yep, we're all fucked. Reach was the largest battle of the Human Covenant War, and it lasted an entire month. So complete total battling for a whole month. Kind of changing lanes here, but 3 years before the Battle of Reach, Cortana was created by a scan of Dr. Halsey's brain. So that's kind of the shorthand version of it, but the long answer is that in 2549, Halsey cloned herself 20 times and then scanned the brains and transferred the clone's consciousness to AIs. Cortana ended up being one of those AIs. So there's a viral termination code in all AIs that kill themselves off after 7 years. That code in Cortana was broken or bypassed by Cortana herself. See, she thought even differently than other AIs because she even called herself Cortana, like she picked her own name. So without the code, she can definitely live longer than 7 years, or theory would suggest. And she was programmed with all the best insurgency software, code cracking software, and a bunch of other stuff to make her a very powerful AI. She was already unique and intelligent, even for an intelligent AI, but equipping her with all this other weapons, so to speak, and tools made her extremely valuable and important. That's why she was selected to be the mission specialist for Operation Red Flag. Cortana was activated on Reach and was also there during the fall of Reach. At this point, she had been alive about 2 years, and she hadn't spent all of her time on Reach, but most of it. During this time, she was able to study and crack the Forerunner technology and equipment to better understand it and learn their language and basically be able to gather all the information possible that she could. During this time, she learned about the location of Installation 04, which is the Halo ring that got activated 100,000 years ago. At this point, Cortana has no idea what Halos are or what they're meant for. She just knows that there is something of significant value at these coordinates. As Noble Team fled the Fall of Reach, they got Cortana to the Pillar of Autumn, which is a human spaceship, if I didn't already mention that. They put her in the Pillar of Autumn system, and as protocol, when fleeing battle, you must put in random coordinates and just send it. However, instead of doing a random slipspace coordinate, Cortana threw in the coordinates of Installation 04. They go through slipspace and pop out, and there's a fucking Halo just sitting there. By absolute sheer random chance. Before this, not even the Covenant knew where any of the Halos were. They knew about them, they thought they knew what they were, but they hadn't actually found any yet. The Pillar of Autumn going there wasn't supposed to, but it still left a little breadcrumb trail for the Covenant to find and follow. And they did pretty quickly. This is where the beginning of the first Halo game story takes place, is they just showed up in, or out of slipspace, to see this giant floating ring structure. They start getting attacked, and, well, if you play the game, you know. But if not, guess what? We're probably going to hit on that later. This is where I'm going to wrap up the episode. Very good place to stop, you know, the whole backstory before the first game starts. I definitely plan on touching on the story during the games as well, and hitting more, maybe a little more backstory that's relevant towards the actual game content. But right now, we're going to shift directions and do something else. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for putting up with me and sticking with me through this whole choppy, strung out at time episode. It'll get better, I promise. Just stick with me. As Andy Dufresne says, if you've come this far, maybe you're willing to come a little further. Rate, review me wherever you are listening. It helps so much. Please, if you are listening to this, find me. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Give me your opinion. Just tell me I'm doing a great job. Something, please. You can find me everywhere under my handle. Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, all under Vitilago. That's V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. That's V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. And as always, thank you again for listening. Stay awesome and Godspeed. kind of just dickish.